From the Carter Subaru Studios, this is the G and Ursula Show with G Scott and Ursula Voitine.
Good morning, happy Monday, and thank you for listening to the G and Ursula Show. It is the 11 o'clock hour of the show. So at 11:47, we'll take your text, your feedback, and Ursula's words to live by. At 11:33, we'll have good news. That's always a great time of the show to do that. But right now, let's get to headlines.
And G, we're going to be starting with some breaking news that you actually just shared with me, which is that Harvard is just announcing that all of its classes are going to be taught online for the next school year. But of course, you should not expect a tuition break. It's going to still be nearly $50,000 a year to go to Harvard. That's not counting room and board.
Ursula.
Will there be school next fall?
No, I mean, when you answer that, do you answer that with your heart?
I answer that with what I know as of right now, what I know that is being planned for. They have every intention of doing as much on campus as possible, but I think they're also realizing that there are going to be faculty members that have no desire to come back. They want to teach, and I've seen what many of them have written in terms of editorials and saying, if the pressure is for schools to open because parents need to go back to work and they need to have some babysitting, essentially, for their kids, that's not a great reason to have people go back to school in person, mm-hmm. because that's not how the virus thinks.
So I guess the question is going to be for schools and, you know, going forward, what's more important, right? What's more important, the health of our students or money? In the case of Harvard, Harvard says, hey, the health of our students are very important. So what we're going to do is during the next school year, the 2020-21 school year, we're going to do all online classes. But yes, the $49,653 a year that it costs, we still need that money.
Because they're going to argue that they're going to still be paying the professors and the faculty
they have
and staff.
They have an endowment, too.
Well, a huge one.
Oh,
I mean, they have a huge endowment. And again, I think if a school decides, hey, we're going to have to go online, and obviously, I mean, you have to get an education, but you also have to do it safely. And if it ends up being something where it's mostly going to be online, I would still argue that for the parents or the students who are paying this tuition, they need to get some kind of break, period.
Yeah.
I mean, that is honestly what I feel. And I think that there is that pressure to have kids be on campus so they won't have to deal with that.
Ursula, before you move to the next headline, I need to, I'm not joking. Are you a little nervous about this? I mean, about the having to possibly pay a full amount, and especially if your son's going to possibly be at home. What are some of the conversations you're having?
Well, one of the conversations we're having is if, in fact, that he does not go back, and this is something he's even saying, if he doesn't have to go back after Thanksgiving break, if the rest of the school year is just going to be, you know, from home, well, we need to start looking at, can we save, because we're on one of those paying $50,000 a year, and can we look at possibly doing community college classes where he can get some credits, and then we just have him work from home. He's actually right now doing Postmates. He's doing delivery. His internship did not work out because of COVID. So, you know, maybe he continues working or does something else to try to further his education in other ways until he can go back to a full on-campus experience. I'll just tell you the other thing. I just feel horrible for them.
So do I.
I feel horrible for our high school kids. I mean, I feel horrible for all students right now. And granted, it's not going to be forever. We are eventually going to get a vaccine. But how disruptive is this?
We have been talking about this since the very beginning. And it's like, it seems like these things, graduations from kids and not being able to play sports and not being able to go to college and mess up those years. It seems like we have to have that conversation to then focus on, oh, yeah, what do we need to do about this pandemic? Like, no matter what, we can sit here and we can argue about masks. We can argue about death rates. We can do all of this stuff. No matter what, we're not going to out-talk this pandemic. So we're either going to fight this together or we're going to continue to have spikes all over the country, and we're going to continue to have people paying money when their kids aren't in school. It's just a bad, bad ordeal. Last thing, Ursula.
No, I want to ask you something, though, actually, because I forgot to ask you about this, because you've had a conversation with your youngest, who is going to be going into his senior year in high school, and you've had to give him what you feel is the truth about what's going to happen this year.
I don't think he's playing high school football. And that's the truth. It's my son's senior year. It's his senior year, his last opportunity to play high school football. And I had to let him know that is, I don't think he's going to be playing football. Now, I know hopefully we can get somebody on from the WIAA so they can tell us what's going to be going forward. And that'd be great. I'm giving my opinion. I don't think that there's going to be high school football here in the state of Washington. It's at least not starting in at the end of August like it usually does, or beginning of September. Now, if you're going to delay it possibly in the spring, okay, that's a different story. But I do not think that they will be starting football on time here in the state of Washington.
And in fact, have you had that conversation with your older son about college football?
Sure did. And so, you want to know what I said?
What?
You playing football. They will have a college football.
Is it really?
Because
of all the money.
Because of the money.
Yeah, so they will play, but they may not have people in the stands. Yeah,
right. And you know what? He just said this. He's like, Dad, if I don't have a college football season, I just want to come home. I'm not going to be staying out here.
Yeah.
He says, if that's the case, if there's not going to be a football season, I'm coming home, and then I'm just going to be at home and I'll train there.
Yeah.
The more we have the truth and talk about the truth with this conversation, what's going on with this pandemic, the better we're going to be. But if we continue fighting about mask and no mask and this and what this person says and what Fauci said here, Dr. Burks here, okay, we just need to fight this at the federal level. One day, I would love for that to happen.
Yeah, but right now people are just trying to figure out day by day what does this mean. And for a lot of us who have kids in college or in high school, it just is such a hard time to try to plan for anything. Okay, the driver of that Jaguar that hit and killed a Black Lives Matter protester and injured another one is expected to be in court today. Citizen journalist Omari Salisbury was at the demonstration and tells Cairo 7 the driver had gone around a barricade on I-5 just after 1:30 on Saturday morning.
I've never seen somebody, when they get to a barricade, they accelerate. Most people slow down when you get to a barricade. The car definitely accelerated.
Given what you saw there, could you tell how badly Summer Taylor was hurt?
100%. Yeah. I mean, you could tell immediately that the people who were injured there were injured very seriously.
24-year-old Summer Taylor did die at the hospital on Sunday. Love Diaz, who was doing a Facebook stream as this was happening, she is at Harborview and is apparently getting death threats.
Wait, I lost my train of thought. Death threats?
Yes.
Oh my goodness. Okay. As we get ready to find out what the motive is of the person that was driving the car, we're going to find out, wonder if it was like, if this is something that he wanted to do. This is something that he planned on doing. Was he under the influence? Did he not? Because he had gone down a wrong way in doing this. We're going to find out if he purposely did it. There's so many questions as to this, but the ultimate question is this. Why? Why would they allow to continue being out there? I think it was 19 days in a row out there on I-5 when you know that that was not safe for them. And it seems like it took a death and someone critically injured for people to say, okay, enough's enough. We can't have this. And it should have never come to that.
And as we also mentioned, the same thing happened with CHOP. It was only after there were deaths. It's like, okay, now we've got to intervene. Now we've got to do it. I mean, these are... And I also want to say, we discussed it at the beginning of the show, and we've had many people text in, and we've had people send us emails. And I am still hoping that it is a vocal minority that is doing the blaming of the people who were protesting, who were saying they, you know, got what they deserved and that kind of thing. Because no matter how you feel about the protests, you have to at least still show some sympathy that someone died and someone is critically injured. And whether you agree with what they were doing or not, it's still, you're talking about human life. And that to me is so scary when we see some of the comments that are coming in. Okay, they did it again, G. Thousands of protesters marched to Seattle Mayor Jenny Durkan's house on Friday night, chanting their demands to defund police.
We came down to Jenny Durkan's mansion to bring the demands of the movement and of the families who have been impacted by police violence to her doorstep, as she seems to not be able to hear our demands any other way.
So that was a protester who was speaking to King 5 after the last march to the mayor's house. And remember that event, City Councilmember Shama Sawant addressed the crowd in front of the mayor's mansion, prompting Durkan to call for a full investigation for endangering her family.
I had a partner of mine hit me up after we had this discussion last week about if you should or if you shouldn't go to the mayor's house to do those things. And after about an hour and a half, we just agreed to disagree. I am never going to be on the side of going to someone's house. I'm sorry. You know what I mean? Like, I'm just not going to. Now, I don't think...
Because people were pointing out, hey, she didn't have an issue with people protesting in CHOP.
I had an issue.
Summer of Love.
Well, I'm never going to be okay with that, because would people think different if it was if Mayor Jenny Durkan had small kids? What if she had small kids that were in bed during that time? And would you want her kids to see that? And if you say, well, it's different if they have kids, well, then you should treat it all the same.
She does have kids. I don't think they're very young, but
okay,
that's
why I said young kids. But you shouldn't do it that way. That's why I don't think anybody should ever go after, except for the president's kids are grown. But I don't like going after kids or doing that. So in the case of Mayor Jenny Durkan, I just don't think you should go to her house.
Well,
I'll never agree with that.
Here is another issue, because as she pointed out, she is a former U.S. attorney, and she has received death threats. And if you recall, look up the name Tom Wales. He is a former U.S. attorney who was murdered in the basement of his home. That case is yet to be solved. There is still a killer out on the loose. And, I think that there are ways that you can make your point without having to identify where someone lives, someone like the mayor. And here is, this next headline is going to explain why it could be very dangerous if the Thomas Wales story isn't enough. So in Norman, Oklahoma, two police officers are now under investigation after sharing the address of a city councilwoman to allegedly teach her a lesson after the police budget was cut by nearly $900,000. So a week ago, someone broke into this councilwoman's neighbor's home and tried to sexually assault her. And the councilwoman believes that she was the intended target.
Ursula, and this kind of piggybacks on the topic of going to people's house and this giving out information to city council's place. There's way too much hate that is going on, and there's way too much justification for hate, right? Like, well, we did this because of that. At some point, just because that happened doesn't mean that this is right. And this is scary to even think about. It's almost raped. It's unbelievable.
Well, and I think that's the issue with, you never know. When you put that information out there, you never know. I mean, there are people who are mentally ill who are thinking, hey, I'm going to do something for a good cause, and I'm going to do something and teach this person. And you don't know who your audience is when you put it out there. And in that particular case, it's allegedly two police officers who shared the address as retaliation. So, boy, that is a mess. So Tacoma's mayor has now joined a dozen other mayors who want to explore the idea of giving people cash every month with no strings attached. It is part of an idea known as universal basic income or guaranteed income, which, as you know, was widely promoted by former presidential candidate Andrew Yang. What do you think?
Yes, I think there's a lot of people that need some income. Yes, I'm all for it. You know, Ursula, I was thinking the other day, I was on my run, and I don't know, sometimes my brain thinks different and weird, but I was thinking about if I lived in my neighborhood, right, If I lived in my neighborhood and I was the richest man in my neighborhood and everybody in my neighborhood was struggling and poor and barely able to eat, but yet I'm here in my house and I'm just living good and everything is great because you know what? I worked hard for it and I got all of this money. But I looked out my window every single day and I saw all of my neighbors struggling, barely able to make it, barely able to eat every single day, and I never did anything. That's what I think about with some of these big corporations. That's what I think about. This is no knock at Amazon, but that's how I think a little bit about Amazon. I think about all of the money that the owner of Amazon, that they have, and all of the problems that we have here in our country and how easily it can be fixed. So a little bit of income for people out there that's struggling. No, Ursula, I don't have a problem with that because people need help right now.
Well,
they really do.
I agree that people need help, but I don't know that universal basic income is the answer. And, you know, for one reason, it's very expensive. And so where would this money come from? And I think
maybe
eventually
from the tax
it would
breaks.
Have to come from. Well, if it comes from tax breaks, but there have been enough studies to show that it would, in fact, probably end up being an increase in taxes to make up for it. Because remember, there are already programs that are in trouble, like Social Security. Is there going to be Social Security for us when the time comes?
Social Security is universal basic income supported by taxes. And the fact is that the top tax rates for people earning, you know, $200,000 to $1 million and plus has been falling astronomically for decades. It's at the lowest point it's ever been. People used to pay like 75% marginal tax rates during the Eisenhower administration.
Okay, but Social Security is for when you are no longer able to work.
Or choose not to
after yes. a certain number of years
yes.
working, right? In the case of universal basic income, it goes to everybody, no matter what, even the rich people. So
how much does it take to get people out of poverty versus to keep them from being there in the first place?
I don't have that answer right off the top of my head, but I think there are a lot of things. It's always these ideas sound great until you have to figure out, well, where does that money come from? And then the other question I would have is, for some people, you know how, that last week you were talking about how you were upset with people taking advantage of the system when it comes to those additional $600 a week? Well, if you're getting an income that you don't have to do anything about no matter what, I mean, and again, I'm not saying that there wouldn't be people who truly need it, but there would be people who would absolutely not need it and would be taking advantage of the system. So as much as it sounds like a great idea, I think that there are, I would have to see how it would pencil out. So I'd be curious, but I'm guessing there's a reason we don't already have it right now.
All right. 11:47. you know why? Ursula.
Uh-huh.
You want to know why I did that? Not that I didn't listen to what you said.
Well, we ran out of time.
I seriously, like, to really answer back to what you just said.
Yeah. Yeah.
I probably had about 30 to 45 minutes worth of things to say. And because this topic is so big, but the reason why this topic is so big is because for so many years it has been unfairly done. And the system
that I agree
has
with.
Been designed.
Unfair.
So in order to make it fair, guess what? You got to ruffle feathers. Okay, I see. I didn't want to go there. 11:47, we take your text feedback and Ursula's words to live by. Up next, we do good news. It's Gene Ursula.
It is now 11:34. Thank you so much for spending part of your morning with us here on the G and Ursula Show. Around 10 minutes from now, we will be sharing your texts and feedback and, of course, words to live by. But right now, let's get to some good news.
Good news, got that old, great news, got that joy.
And this segment of the show is brought to you by your local Carrier heating and air conditioning dealers. So when American soldiers go to war, they are promised that no matter what happens, they will not be left behind. But there are many people critical to the success of our soldiers whose lives are often on the line, even years after the conflict ends. And this story from CNN is about an Afghan translator who finally made it to the U.S.
When the Taliban attacked Afghanistan, I saw a lot of bad things that they did to the people. Everybody were against them, and we didn't want them to be in our country. I decided to become a translator. I didn't know that the translator is always the will be at the first line to the war. I served as a translator for 9 years. I met Matt Tindis before I saved his life. I saw Matt, like he was in a ditch, and he was out of ammo, and the Taliban saw him, and like everybody were shooting at him. I was crawling in the bushes. When I got like really close to Matt, I started shooting at them, and I jumped. I shoulder checked Matt, and he was like, "Who the hell are you?" I was like, "I'm Janice. I'm one of the translators. You're not safe. Let's go back." When he saw the body of the Taliban, and he was like, "Thanks for saving his life." And then since that time, we become even closer than brothers. If you decide to work with U.S. troops, you're not only putting yourself in danger, you are putting your entire family in danger. If the Taliban catch you, they will torture you in front of your kids and families. I was scared. I didn't want anything to happen to my family because of my service. And Matt, he said, "I promise you, I will get you here. I will come myself to Afghanistan and bring you here." I thought for me, it will take a couple of months, but it took years.
You got it, bro?
Oh, good.
All right. Dinner's ready.
If I didn't come here, I wouldn't be alive now. I would be dead.
The night that you arrived in America, do you remember me being there?
Yeah, I remember.
But I have still a lot of translators back in Afghanistan that they are living in danger for years. And the only hope that they have is to come to the United States.
Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you.
I promise that I will never forget about them. It doesn't matter how long does it take. We will not stop fighting until I get the last translator which left behind.
That's a beautiful story. The bonds that are made in the, you know, middle of a war. It's pretty incredible.
It really is. I mean, as someone who, I don't even know firsthand on what it's like to experience what it is that he was talking about. But I know the story and the stories of many that we've heard over the years. They're always impactful and powerful. And I'm just grateful to be able to hear it. That was amazing and fantastic.
So another story that we're sharing this morning is about Crayola, and they just released this highly anticipated new box of crayons called Colors of the World, and it features colors to represent all skin tones. So wanting everyone to experience the joy of being able to easily color a self-portrait, there is an elementary school student named Madison Wilson who decided to raise money so that she could buy her school some boxes of these new crayons. So she had a pretty modest goal at first, but her deadline of June 30th approached, and she saw that her fundraiser was quickly taking off, and so she was able to raise close to $3,000, but decided, you know what, just like any other good fundraiser will do, she thought it would be a good idea to up the goal.
Hi, I'm Madison, and I've raised $6,000. My goal is $10,000. Thank you for all those who have donated, are about to donate, and heard of it.
KSBY-TV is reporting that in addition to the crayons, she's now going to donate multicultural construction paper and also some books featuring diverse characters as well.
Little kids doing amazing things. And, you know, I hope that we adults can be better examples for these kids that are doing amazing things. And I'm talking to myself as well, Ursula. You know, you all the time, you always on good news. You heard the story about the military, but then you hear about little kids doing amazing things.
Well, and we always talk about how it's the kids of the future that are going to be that give us so much inspiration and so much hope. And that is just another example of that. So I love sharing those stories. Hey, with the little amount of time that we have available, I want to ask you about something. Because I just read this new study that shows more than 70% of Washington workers are suffering from burnout right now because of working from home. And then here was the surprising thing. 34% say they are planning to switch jobs. Does that surprise you at all? Where are you going to switch jobs?
Okay. I no, that does not surprise me. Because, again, I think all of us, Ursula, are in the last 3-4 months, we are all watching and evaluating everything that has been going on in our lives. For the first time ever, we have been forced to slow down in a way that we have never done in our entire lives. So, yes, I believe that. I believe that people are able to look at their jobs and see if it's for them, if it's not for them. Look at their the person that they're working for or working with. And I think people are just starting to wake up, right? And they're just starting to say, hey, you know what? I didn't know that I really did not like my job until now. So what do you think, Ursula?
Well, I just the whole idea of burnout during the last 4 months, we joke about it, but it does feel like every week is a month. Or, you know, and I used to say, my gosh, you know, time's just flying. But it seems like everything has slowed down so much during the pandemic. And even though we're still doing the same jobs, I don't know if it's just the constant drumbeat of everything that is going on, but burnout is real. And I got to say, it was so sweet because you and I took, we all took Thursday and Friday of last week off. And every time we take time off, it's very sweet because people really worry when we're not here. Maybe some people are rejoicing, but there are some people who are worried that something has happened to us merely by us taking a day off.
Right. And I think that, and they do. That is pretty cool. Glad that some cared. And some thought it was vacation for them, too, because they didn't get to really hear us on the show airways at the time. But, you know, Ursula, I look at it like this. I enjoy and love my job more over the last 4 months than I ever have. Like, I really have an understanding and appreciation for what we do, not just because of the platform that we have, but because we are able to actually have conversations with people that we are talking to on a daily basis through our text line, through our Facebook page. And I have learned so much in 4 months and learned from people who I disagree with. I'm not going to disagree. There's no disagreement about racism. There's either one side of which. But there is conversations that I've been able to have, and people have made me open my eyes up to different things. And that's because of this show, and that's why I appreciate it that much more.
Absolutely.
And, of course, I just every time I can get a chance, I should get a dollar for every time in a show I say, Chef is cranky. Anyway, I just wanted to say that. Sorry, Chef.
He's busy.
Coming up next, we take your text, your feedback, and Ursula's words to live by. It's G and Ursula. Welcome back into the G and Ursula show. We appreciate all of you. It is now time for your text, feedback, and then Ursula's words to live by. Ursula, you first.
So when it comes to the protester killed by a driver on the freeway, 425 says, gee, you asked why leaders are waiting until something happens? Well, they don't put a stop sign up until someone dies at an intersection.
Hey, I'm not going to argue with that. All right. 425, they should not have been hit, and they should not have been protesting on a freeway.
And you know what I love in the simplicity of that statement? It's like, you can say both. They shouldn't have been hit. It's horrible that they were hit. They shouldn't have been on the freeway, but you know, bottom line, you can still have sympathy and empathy for the fact that a person was killed.
Yep, absolutely.
Working from home with kids, 425 says, ugh, I'm not a teacher. And when my freaking phone rings, my kids start crying immediately. I swear. I feel for you.
253 says, gee, your coworkers shouldn't have to do extra work for free because you didn't use birth control. My time and labor are valuable, too. I should be paid accordingly. I have 5 kids. All right. I mean, look, here's what you get when you get G. You get a team player, even though Chef and Ursula might not think that all the time. But you get a team player. That's my new little thing.
I will say that if you look up the definition and description of team player, that would be me. But I also understand where people would be upset about it. 206 says, yes, those of us doing more work in the office should get paid more for doing more work to support those home with kids doing less work. It's not selfish. It's fair. Ursula, you are correct.
253, too much of that Ursula's correct stuff. 253, it takes a village, guys. If your village isn't supportive, then move on and find a new one.
Hmm. Who should drive on road trips, the man or the woman? 206 says, gee, I can see where this is going. You're going to say she should drive so you don't get the business for your bad driving.
425 says, Ursula, your husband is the typical passive-aggressive driver everyone hates.
No. My husband is amazing, and he's just a kind person. Just doesn't like people passing him. Okay, 425 says, LOL, my husband is also a left-lane camper. I have to tell him that he is holding up traffic.
253 says, gee, my wife is the worst driver. If we're going somewhere, I'm driving, no questions asked.
And final one. 253, I'm a truck driver nearing my 1 million mile mark. If my girlfriend pulls up in her car, I kick her out of the driver's seat. My friends want to go out. I am driving.
College is charging full costs for tuition and housing. 360 says the school is the state of Washington. It is public, not private, so it should be offering refunds.
206 says a college degree shows you have a broad education. It shows you have an ability to stick with something for 4 years straight at that age. A college degree also usually ensures the candidate has some basic proficiency with the English language.
Well, 509 says I'm just a dumb construction worker, but I make more than most of the people my age with a degree.
There you go. Should body cameras be expanded to other professions? 206, wow, G is a true Orwellian. He doesn't mind giving up his freedoms for the betterment of the masses.
Hey, I like to think that I'm easy to work with. Yeah. Hey, Ursula, it's time for your words to live by.
And I'm going to say this day is about looking at being respectful. One of the most sincere forms of respect is actually listening to what someone else has to say. And tolerance for only those who agree with you is really no tolerance at all.
Good stuff. Ursula, I missed you, buddy. Thanks.
I missed you, too.
Chef?
Chef is cranky.
And a bah humbug to you, too.
Andrew?
You trade off when you go on long road trips. It's not the whole one person the entire time. That's the solution.
Look at that. Wisdom by the youngest among us. He's right.
He's actually kind of right. Hey, we do this again tomorrow. Yep, 9 o'clock. You guys, hey, be safe during the rest of your day. We appreciate you for listening. Love you for that. Be good.